My guest today is Josh Carroll. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. What do you do?
I work for Wintellect. We're a training, consulting, debugging company. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of work within the Microsoft stack, but we also do a lot of front-end web development as well as Xamarin.
Okay. And you're doing a lot of JavaScript. At least you're talking a lot about JavaScript.
Absolutely. For the past 4 years or so, a large portion of what I've been doing has been front-end web development. Mm-hmm. And heavily focused on JavaScript frameworks, kind of, you know, knockout to all the way up through Angular. And primarily my focus now is on Angular.
Okay. I knew that because you're speaking at CodeStock. You did a couple talks on Angular.
Mm-hmm.
So Angular is there's a lot of conversations right now about Angular 2.0, which hasn't even been released yet. Or it's in beta now.
It's
right?
Alpha, actually.
It's
early
alpha
now. Bits.
And it's still got people up in arms a little bit, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And mostly there's, about compatibility, that there's it broke. There's breaking changes from 1 to 2.
Probably the best way to describe Angular 2 is a brand new framework, but okay. It's inspired heavily by Angular 1.0.
Interesting.
Okay. And so there's a lot of concern about it. Obviously, there's a lot of FUD, you know, uncertainty and doubt out there. People saying things, you know, like, Angular killed my dog and broke up my marriage and
killed
it causes cancer. but I think most of the fears are really kind of unfounded. I think there was probably some bad messaging initially around mm-hmm. Angular 2.0. But the more that I've worked with it on my talks and getting it together and even just developing messaging for clients, what I found is that if you follow certain practices within your Angular 1 applications today, you're going to be in a really good spot for migrating over to Angular 2.
Okay. Can we just back up 1 second here and just tell what problem does Angular solve?
Well, I think the big problem that Angular solves for a lot of developers today is that it gives you this really nice, expressive data binding kind of framework to work in. And okay. So you have HTML, and instead of you having to do all of your rendering in JavaScript, you can just have HTML and you decorate some attributes on there. And for people who come from either a Silverlight or a WPF background, it's really appealing because right. The data binding aspect just kind of makes sense.
Okay.
It also gives you the nice front end framework to be able to do everything you need to do for a single page application. It's kind of a one-stop shop. So instead of having to stitch together a whole bunch of little libraries, you get everything you need in Angular to be able to build a nice, impressive web application.
Okay, and that was true in Angular 1. It's also going to be true in Angular 2.
Absolutely, and Angular 2 even has some new features that are going to be part of the framework that are really going to make it a nice story. It has speed is a lot better in Angular 2. Now, one of the sacrifices is that we don't get two-way data binding anymore. It's unidirectional, but I think that React really proved that that's a model that makes a lot of sense, and especially when it comes to being able to render things within the DOM, you get some amazing speed improvements by having kind of this directed acyclical graph, this unidirectional data flow. And then on top of that, Angular 2.0 also has an abstracted rendering engine, which means that now we have the possibility of being able to do things like server-side rendering and even native rendering. And there's already been efforts done and some demos done on both of those. So you one day might be able to write a Angular application and have it render down to a native Android or iOS application.
That would be pretty cool. We'll save that conversation to dive deep into Angular 2 when it gets closer to release. Hopefully it'll be back at that time. But mm-hmm. right now, let's talk about just the migration strategies, because people are concerned about that. They've written applications already, or they're
Absolutely.
In the process of writing applications, and they want to be ready for this. You mentioned some, I think it was the phrase, best practices or some good coding practices.
Yeah, what we really advise our clients to do now, and what I tell everybody to do, is probably the very first thing I tell everybody, if you're working, and this doesn't even apply to just Angular, is that you need to be writing ECMAScript 6 today.
Okay.
And so whether you choose to use TypeScript, which I happen to personally think is a really nice transpiler.
TypeScript is Microsoft's language that compiles down to JavaScript.
Right, absolutely.
But it's type safe and that supports classes.
It's basically cool ECMAScript 6 with added type annotations on top of it.
I see, yeah.
And it's a superset of ECMAScript 6.
Okay.
And then, but if you aren't, if you're not real keen on having types within your JavaScript, and some people feel passionately about that, and you just want to use plain ECMAScript 6, mm-hmm. Babel.js is a great option. It's another transpiler, but it's designed to go strictly to the spec, so for ECMAScript 6. But the reason I say that is because the browsers, you're never going to be able to write up to 100% of the spec, because you're always going to have to support some legacy browser, okay. At least a couple versions back. And so I think transpilers are really here to stay. And if you want to be able to take advantage of those features, then you need to be writing in ECMAScript 6 and using a transpiler right now.
I see. Okay.
So on top of that, that's kind of the first step. And with Angular 2.0, most of the idea around is based on components. And this whole idea of web components and having this composable blocks of application that you can just stitch together. And we have directives in Angular 1.0, but we also have, you know, controllers and views and the way that we route. And so the nice thing is that you can take your entire application, and instead of thinking about it in terms of these disconnected controllers and views, really reorganizing it around features and components. And so you start to take all of your, what used to be your controllers and views that were separate, and you sort of tie them together in a directive and make it a single component instead. And so instead of thinking about your application as just a, you know, a whole bunch of views and controllers that you mush together, you think of it as composing a bunch of widgets to form a whole cohesive application.
This is new ground for JavaScript developers, I think, in general. I'm generalizing here, but JavaScript, since it's a sort of it's a scripting language, it's a very small language. JavaScript developers, I think my impression is that they're used to they're not used to that kind of structure in their lives.
I think in some sense, but there's a lot of best practices that are starting to form. And
I'm not saying that they should be that way.
Right.
I'm saying that's my observation. Maybe that's unfair. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that a fair observation, you think?
I think so. Some of the general guidance that's come out of people who've been working on really large-scale Angular applications is they just kind of fell naturally into this place.
Okay. Maybe frameworks like Angular, I think, help. To organize your projects, because they help you to organize your thoughts and direct you in a way.
Right, absolutely. And the idea of being able to formalize that now is, you know, slowly moving into the spec as the idea of web components and things like the shadow DOM and having, you know, encapsulated, you know, styles and things like that. As those become more formalized, you have projects like Polymer that are designed to, you know, polyfill that and give you web components today. But I think that that's going to become more of a trend. Interestingly enough, you know, you think about Internet Explorer, I think it was 4 or 5, actually had the ability to write custom tags and drop them in, and you could do these things. And so they were kind of ahead of their time in a little bit of a way.
Yeah.
And so now we're getting web components, which is...
that's about the time that Ajax was introduced
Exactly.
It came out in IE4 or something like that.
So, thinking about your application in terms of components is a big one. Another big one that I like to tell people is it'd be great if you could start migrating over to using the new router, but the new router in Angular is not quite ready yet.
Okay.
The built-in router in Angular is very limited, and it kind of grew out of a much simpler time when you basically get a single place in the page that you can drop a view in, and so you have these really atomic routes, and they're very big. But there's other projects out there like UI Router. It's a third-party component that's open source that you can just drop in and use within Angular.
So this is a JavaScript framework?
It's a plugin to Angular. It's an Angular module that you can plug in. And it allows you to have sibling routes and nested routes. And so it really takes that idea of composing your application together into these states in a much more granular fashion. And so now, instead of me thinking about just having my navigation being just some HTML and maybe an inline controller, I can have a navigation component and it can be part of my route.
Okay, so if we start using these plugins, then I can start at least thinking about the way that my application should be structured when Angular 2 comes out.
Right, absolutely. Okay. And then probably lastly, I would say, is that if you're using ECMAScript 6 and you're really writing your JavaScript in ECMAScript 6, then you can take advantage of using the new module system. So ECMAScript modules are terrible in JavaScript right now. You know, nobody ever thought that we were going to be building applications with, you know, just hundreds of files that we concatenate and minify together and send down to the browser. And the browser was just not designed, and JavaScript was not designed the same way that, like, we have in, you know, C and C Sharp with linkers and compilers.
Yeah, well, JavaScript was created in 25 minutes.
Right, exactly.
Back of a napkin, yeah. I think, is the legend.
10 days by Brendan Eich is what it supposedly.
That's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah, exactly. And but it was just, we never envisioned this idea of writing full applications in JavaScript. Well, the good news about ECMAScript 6 and beyond is that we're going to get a first-class module system in JavaScript now. But again, it doesn't exist in all but the most modern of browsers if you're running in Edge mode. So you need a polyfill for that. And there's a library out there
called... Define that word, polyfill.
Polyfill is a way of using JavaScript to sort of fill in the gaps within a browser so that, say, if I want to use a native, you know, promises, but I don't have access to that because I'm running in IE10, then you can use what's called a polyfill. And so what happens is that as an application developer, I just write my code as though that feature existed in the browser, and I let the polyfill handle patching the browser for me so that I don't have to think about all the differences and incompatibilities within a browser.
I see. And we call it, sometimes we call it graceful degradation.
Yes,
so that if the
absolutely.
Browser doesn't have that feature, it may not work quite as well. It may be a little inefficient, or it may do things a different way, but at least it works.
Right, absolutely. Okay. And the big benefit from a developer standpoint is, again, they don't have to think about, oh, am I running in, you know, IE9, or am I running in Chrome? They just write their code one way, and they let the polyfills handle.
Okay. So the polyfill, is that a JavaScript library?
Yeah, there's several of them out there. It's kind of a generic term that was coined by a web developer named Remy Sharp. He's a big guy in the open source community and Node and big in web development, and he kind of coined that phrase. And then several people got together, Paul Irish and from Google, and a bunch of other guys, Adi Osmai, and they put together this framework called Modernizer. And that actually shipped with you know, Visual Studio. When you would do, like, new, you know, MVC project, Modernizer would just get dropped in there for you. And that gave you a way to be able to do HTML5 and CSS3, even though you might be running in IE7 or 8.
Right. Okay.
And so using a polyfill for doing module importing within your browser. So there's several of them out there. The System.js is the one that Angular 2.0 happens to be using.
Okay.
And but there's plenty of others. There's Webpack and a bunch of other frameworks out there that basically give you the same thing.
I see.
But putting all of that together, and I would say strongly encourage people to look at TypeScript. Angular 2.0 is being written in TypeScript, but at the very least, ECMAScript 6. And if you put all of that together, when you actually compare a component written in Angular 1, if you've written it in ECMAScript 6, and if you're using module imports, and if you componentize it, and then you look at the same thing in Angular 2, they're not that much different, actually. Ah. And even for my talks that I gave here, I actually wrote my Angular 2 talk first, and then I backported it to Angular 1. And it turned out it wasn't that hard.
I see. If I want to learn more about this, where's a good place to go?
That's a good question. Right now, a lot of the information for Angular 2 is sparse. There's a small handful of people that are kind of talking about this. There's different videos that are out there. I try to blog when I can.
Where's your blog?
That's a funny story. So my blog is actually, I write some for the Winelect blog, and we have a dev center. But I also have a personal blog that's called TechnoFatty.
Fatty, like chubby?
The 30-second version of that is that don't ever name anything on the internet that you don't expect to be permanent. I kind of put it out there as a joke almost, and then a guy linked back to it, and I was like, I guess I'm permanently techno fatty at this point. So yeah, I kind of just embraced it from here and ran with it. But yeah, that's
And are you speaking a lot?
I try to as much as I can.
What's coming up for you?
Actually, so far, nothing. You know,
okay.
I've got four kids at home, and so I did code stock here. But I've got several other conferences that I've submitted to.
Okay.
So we'll see. You know, if I get accepted to those,
maybe our paths will cross at one of those.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, David. The other day, I actually was able to get Skype for up on my Xbox, and had a lot of fun playing around with that as a technology, and get it up and running on my Xbox One and the Kinect. And so I travel for work sometimes, and I was away from home, and one night was able to pull up on my phone and have all of my crazy four kids running around talking to me. And it's kind of interesting to see how technology enables us to be able to connect with our friends and our family in that way. And but yeah, it's fun. Skype and being able to do sort of the FaceTime feels very futuristic to me, even though I know it's not that way anymore. But definitely a neat experience to be able to talk to my kids over my phone in video and have them running around the room all talking to me through the Xbox.